Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. You may be seated. First case on our calendar is 07-1054, Carol E. Newman, Adams County Auditor versus William Wilkins, succeeded by Richard Levin, Tax Commissioner. Mr. DiMuzio.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, if I could, for rebuttal.
Watch your time.
Before I get to the merit issues, I did want to talk a little bit about the jurisdictional proposition of law that we presented. The issue there is, does shall not mean shall not? The statute says that an application for tax exemption shall not relate to any equipment or facilities that were installed prior to 1974. I did want to clarify one point. I read the summary of the Supreme Court yesterday of today's case, and there may be a misconception about the facts. We are not relying upon some replacement equipment for that argument. There was actually equipment installed prior to 1974 that appears in the actual application that was filed by the taxpayer. So it's not substitute. It's actual equipment that obviously the application related to equipment prior to 1974.
Is the post-74 equipment identifiable?
Yes. There's attached to the application is a list showing each piece of equipment and also the date that it was installed. That's how we know it was installed prior to 1975. There's a long line of cases on this, as the Court knows, which I cite in my brief, Columbia Toledo, Elko Metals, and others, that when the statute is this clear, the legislature intended it to mean exactly what it says, which is that if it contains a request for exemption for equipment prior to 1975, the application is not in compliance with the statute. There's also a policy reason, I think, why the Court should enforce it here. These tax exemptions are sort of self-executing. The application is filed by the taxpayer. The taxpayer can immediately begin to take that tax exemption. There's a disparity in information here between the regulators and the taxpayer. The taxpayer has all the cost data. They have all the information. And I think if this Court rules my way in the jurisdiction, I think the next time this comes up, these taxpayers are going to make sure that they're doing it in compliance with the statute. They're not trying to get any additional equipment in that doesn't meet the statutory.
Counsel, as the case is before us at this point, is the pre 75 or the 74 is that in or out in terms of taxability? Is it in or out in terms of taxability as the case stands at this point?
As the case stands now, the BTA has excluded. That was their remedy. They've excluded the pre-1975 equipment. My position is that's not what the statute says. It doesn't say you can selectively decide to.
So it's all or nothing as you see
it? It's all or nothing under the legislative guidelines.
But your opposing counsel would suggest to us that it's the date that the machinery was installed. And it was installed post 74.
No, that's my point. It was actually installed prior to 74 or prior to 75. That's admitted by the BTA. It's admitted by Mr. Ehler in the record. He calls it a mistake. There clearly was equipment. It actually appears, if you look at the original application, you'll see some pre 1975 dates on the listing. That's why I wanted to correct that, because I could tell from the summary, there may have been some misconception. The Attorney General, who isn't arguing today, the Attorney General.
Well, let's disabuse counsel of concern about summary. That's prepared by our very good public information office, and generally we don't even see that or read that. So
that's fine.
It.
I understand.
You shouldn't worry too much about that.
But I did want to say that the Attorney General did have an argument, he's not here today, which did delve into some of this substitute equipment. But my argument does not rely on that. It relies on the specific equipment that actually appeared at that time.
Would you address the jurisdictional issues that they're claiming that your department did not specifically give with specificity the issues that they were raising,
sure,
and therefore we don't have jurisdiction to hear them? And we've been fairly strict about applying that statute,
sure,
and so that's a very special question.
I understand. A couple of responses. First of all, the two merit sort of non-jurisdictional arguments that we have, both involve mistakes the BTA made. The BTA failed to properly apply several legal tests. that they should have applied. Of course, those mistakes didn't occur until the BTA got a hold of the case, so they wouldn't have been something we would even have known about early on, number one. But number two, in just to show how they match up, in our Supreme Court notice of appeal, number two talks about each and every requirement of the statute. Number three talks about strict scrutiny. Number four talks about the waste heat definition. Our BTA appeal, number five talked about most strongly, which is the strict scrutiny. Number two talked about the primary purpose of the was not thermal efficiency improvement. Thermal efficiency improvement is defined as many things, but one of them is this waste heat issue. So we feel it was more than covered. There's a case I cited last week I provided to the court called Columbia Gas, and that was important for two reasons that relate to this. One was it held that the BTA must apply the proper statutory test, which they didn't do in that case, and they didn't do in this case either.
So you don't think that our cases that Justice Stratton suggested, we've applied the jurisdictional section of the code quite strictly in determining whether someone who appeals the Board of Tax Appeals has complied with the code. Your notice of appeal did not refer to waste heat or waste steam, which those are critical terms in determining the whether thermal efficiency is even in play, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor, but as I mentioned in the Supreme Court appeal number two, we said that each and every requirement of the statute must be met. The requirement in there is waste heat is one of the requirements. The other one is primary purpose. So we feel it was clearly met. That's also the type of holding that you see in these cases. The key services case, which I cite, that was the court's holding. That's what the court looks at, is whether each and every test is met. So we did. We also, in number four, we actually mentioned waste heat in the Supreme Court. On the BTA appeal, as I mentioned, in number five, we talked about the failure to apply it most strongly, which picks up the strict scrutiny concept. And in number two, we talked about the failure to meet the thermal efficiency improvement requirements, which include waste heat. So we feel it was met. I'd say roughly a third, Your Honor, of the case at the BTA, if you look at the record, involved the issue of waste heat. So there's no due process issue here. Everybody was aware of the issues. Even the BTA dealt with the waste heat issue. They didn't deal with it properly, but they did deal with the waste heat issue. On the merits, the two key cases are Timken and Key Services. I would mention that the appellee, failed to mention at all in their briefs the Key Services case. That's probably the case that's the most relevant and most on point here. But Timken is important for two reasons. Timken held that the taxpayer has an affirmative burden of showing that it meets each and every requirement of these tax exemption statutes. They clearly haven't in this case. How do we know that? We know that because their own expert, Mr. Coleman, admitted to me in cross-examination, I cite this in the brief, that he was not retained to do an analysis of that sort of thing. So we know it wasn't done. We also know that he admitted that he felt that all the convection heat, the heat they call waste heat, that all the convection heat is absolutely essential to the production of electricity at Stewart. So we know it's there. We know that they never met that test. The key service.
When you say that test, specifically, to what are you referring?
The test of, in terms of Timken?
Yes.
And key services? The issue there is that it must meet each and every item. The statute requires that waste heat be captured and that it be used for these thermal reasons. It also requires that be the primary purpose.
Right.
And is the
dispute about the steam, is that?
That is one of the, that was actually relatively, that only applies to the condenser. Most of it was about the heat that's, almost all this equipment except the condenser and the air heater are actually inside the boiler. They're not tacked on at the end. They're not one of these industrial heat boilers they talk about. These are essential. 51% of the energy that's produced, they call waste heat. So common sense tells us. And we also know it's a rogue theory because you would think there'd be some mention in the literature somewhere that this is waste heat in the power plant literature, and it's simply not there. The only literature they can point to is non-power plant literature for these small boilers that are attached to industrial plants to capture waste heat. The one exception is the air preheater or air heater I talk about in my second.
Counsel, before you go on to the air, what's the purpose of the implementation of this equipment if it's not to capture heat that would be wasted otherwise even though it's in the furnace as opposed to the chimney.
Right. It's not wasted is our position. It's integral. These are designs
capturing anything.
Yes, it's capturing heat. It's not capturing waste heat.
Okay. What would happen to that heat if these items were not installed?
They would not be utilized.
The heat would not be utilized.
That's correct.
Where would the heat go?
The heat would eventually go up and it would eventually be wasted if it weren't captured. But I would make the same argument for the radiant heat. If the radiant heat wasn't captured, it would also be wasted. I use the example of the gasoline tank in my argument to show their position. Their position is analogous to saying that a gasoline tank captures gasoline, because if you punch a hole in it and it leaks out, it would be wasted, and therefore you have to somehow contain it, therefore it contains waste gasoline. That's their argument. The hypothetical that they use in their argument would kill everybody in the plant if you were to vent the heat out the way they want to vent it.
Well, my understanding is that you can produce the electricity without this capturing this excess heat.
You could in a hypothetical that doesn't exist here. But for Stewart, yes, you can do anything you want in a hypothetical plant. But in Stewart,
their argument is not that it's essential to making electricity, but that it makes the making of electricity more efficient because they capture what would normally be a byproduct of heat, and they recirculate it into producing more electricity. So their argument is that it's not that it's essential. They can make electricity without the heat, the excess heat capacity, but by capturing it, they reintegrate it into
sure.
the system. And your argument is a recapture of heat that's not essential still is not waste heat.
Right. In fact, it's essential in Stewart, which is the plant we're talking about. Their own expert admitted that. It's absolutely essential, in the words he used, to the economic production of electricity. Could you theoretically punch a hole and waste it and still produce some electricity? Yes. But that's not what's happening here.
The argument, let me put this in a crude term. I take it that you're arguing that the design of these boilers, or whatever the proper technical term is for them, is, and the items that they're trying to exclude from taxation, are as commonplace and as integral
yes.
to the operation of this kind of facility as would be found on a 1940s locomotive.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
And that you believe what the legislature intended by this statute was new state-of-the-art refinements to capture even more.
Yeah, and at the very least to capture waste heat. And this is just not waste heat under the technology that's at Stewart. To use their analogy, you could really argue the entire plant is one giant thermal efficiency unit. That's what it is. It captures heat, but it doesn't capture waste heat. I did want to mention before I leave our two merit arguments are that the BTA failed to apply the proper test. If you look at the record, if you look at their decision, you'll see no strict scrutiny at all. And we know that applies here. And you won't see any effort to see if each and every element, you won't see any analysis of the primary purpose at all. And that's the mistake.
In terms of concluding what you would have us conclude from the evidence, it is based on your cross-examination of their expert.
Yes, almost all the evidence that we need were admissions from their expert.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DiMuzio. Mr. Ehler.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Tony Ehler. I am with me today is Jeff Miller at counsel's table. We're at the Voorhees firm representing the appellee cross appellants. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal on the cross appeal. There are two general jurisdiction arguments before the Court. Mr. DiMuzio's argument is that the statute parsed from the sentence in which it was written is the provided. It's the proviso sentence in 570946, and it does refer to a date, December 31, 1974, but only, it is only there to instruct when the tax benefits are to apply. If we read the statute as a whole, we see that no less than 6 times within 3 sentences does the General Assembly instruct that the tax commissioner will issue a certificate, that the certificates effective date controls the tax exemption. There's actually a reference to another statute, 5709.50, which says that tax exemption will be provided for the period subsequent to the effective date. We then go back to the statute, and it provides us what is the effective date. This is a tax merits issue. It is a condition which the equipment must meet in order to have a certificate rendered that is effective. It is not transformed into a jurisdictional argument. It does not transform a tax merits issue into an issue of whether the commissioner has jurisdiction over the application. That's what appellant would have this court view, that a tax merits issue, an attribute of the equipment, is somehow transformed into removing from the commissioner's power the adjudication of the application. Clearly, the commissioner doesn't have any jurisdiction to certify equipment that doesn't meet the statute. That's what courts of appeals are for. That's what BTAs are for. We adjudicate what the tax commissioner decided. But it's not a jurisdictional question. Nowhere in the statute does it suggest that. It's simply a look-back provision as to when the tax benefits begin to apply. This statute was passed in 78. The tax benefits went back to 1975. It's as simple as that.
Counsel, getting to the merits, if this plant were built new, what percentage of the investment would you claim is heat recovery or qualifies under the statute to be exempt?
Well, I don't know about the technology today, but when this plant was built.
Say you built this plant today. His argument is you'd be writing the whole thing off.
Well, what if we built it 20 years ago? Is it a moving target with technology? The General Assembly didn't suggest
that. No, his argument is you're claiming everything you put out there is involved in the process of heat recovery.
Your Honor, we have 5% of the total capital cost included in this application at the Stewart plant. The initial furnace where the coal is burned produces a radiant heat that we put into water. It then pushes a high-pressure turbine, which spins a generator and produces electricity. A natural consequence of combusting coal is hot flue gas. It moves up rapidly, and we can put it out the chimney or we can recover it. In fact, I take exception to the appellant's statement that this is just normal technology. There are, in appellant's expert's own chart, a list of generating facilities that put power to the grid, public utilities. They have varying heat rates. Stewart is the fifth most heat efficient plant in the entire region. It's 1974 technology, but we know that there are plants operating today that operate and waste coal-fired stationary power plants, just like Stewart, that waste more than 50 to 80% of the heat produced in that radiant furnace. 50 to 80%. This equipment reintroduces that heat into the system so that it's not wasted. To the point that other plants all have this, Mr. DiMuzio's own witness testified to the contrary. That's not the case. Our witnesses testified. Every witness in this case testified this equipment is not essential. It is essential to efficient production.
Counsel, this is retrofitted equipment, is it not?
It is retrofitted. It's replacement equipment, and with the exception of the two pieces that were improvidently put into the application originally, all of this is post-74, and so it naturally would be replacement equipment. They're replacing certain pieces of equipment that, through wear and tear, are needing replaced or repaired.
And are they replacing the equipment with more efficient equipment that captures more of the radiant heat and the other heat that would otherwise be lost? Or are they replacing it with exactly the same equipment that was installed originally?
Well, we don't know exactly, Your Honor, because as appellee, we didn't feel that we had that burden to show. At the Board of Tax Appeals, however, there was some evidence on that point. There was some follow-up, and what we know is that the only evidence of record regarding these incremental gains that I think you're referring to in the thermal efficiency between replacement equipment and the original is that came from the plant engineer, Mr. Harrell. And at Exhibit CC, there are certain pages, 16 through 17, 52 through 53. The limited information we have, he stated that the upgrades allowed them to collect heat better. These were the upgrades at Stewart. Appellants.
Doesn't the word upgrade suggest that they're equipment that replaces equipment that may have been worn out or obsolete and with higher efficiency equipment?
That is the evidence we have from
Mr.
Harrell.
Well, that's what I'm taking from reading what's before me, but I want to make sure that's correct.
Well, that's what we have from Mr. Harrell, only in a limited question. It wasn't followed up sufficiently. I don't want to misrepresent that to the court. This equipment certainly captures, in our view, waste heat. It does it more efficiently as prior.
Was there the ability to monitor the capturing of waste heat when the facility was created and look at that against the efficiency after the installation of this equipment? And that would certainly tell you whether it's a more efficient operation based on the equipment. And wouldn't that be a fairly obvious test?
Scientifically, that could be done. But the statute doesn't refer to having a function that beats what was previously there. We could continually have better and better heat efficiency technology. But there's also a question of whether you would want to spend the capital to replace the equipment at all. Depending upon the price of coal and the availability of coal, you might say, well, heck, coal is cheap. We don't have to replace this equipment because it's cheaper to buy coal and waste the heat. So even the current technology, even if there wasn't any incremental saving over the previous technology, the state, I think, wrote a statute on its face that encourages the recovery of waste heat at whatever level because we want to preserve the natural resource. We want to make sure it's there.
And Council, my impression from reading the briefs is that we have more or less a battle of the experts. I mean, I read your briefs, and they're very detailed on the expert testimony. I read the other briefs. It sounds like I'm reading a different case. Don't we have an obligation to defer to the trier of fact in this case as to which expert to believe? Because it's very difficult to sort through days and days and days of testimony like you have.
It's very difficult to prepare for argument in that regard, too, Your Honor. I agree that the trial court, in this case the Board of Tax Appeals, is vested with the responsibility of weighing the credibility and believability of the witnesses. The witnesses that were presented that the board relied on explained that in the power plant industry, exhaust gas coming out of the furnace ball of the boiler is considered waste heat. There's no precise definition within the engineering world because they're only considering how to recover it, how not to let it go out the stack. They don't call it waste heat. They don't even call it heat. They call it energy for the most part. They want to get it back. But the trial court, to answer your question, made those findings. It actually discussed in the board's decision appellant's witness and discarded most of his opinions.
Counsel, if you replace a part of the original equipment that is designed to capture waste heat, but it was installed prior to 74, and you replace it with the same type or something that functions essentially the same and achieves about the same efficiency, is that entitled to the exemption?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The statute should be compared to another section within the same subsection within the same section. We have several facilities that can
but
qualify.
Your investment hasn't, in the example I put, hasn't increased the heat recovery efficiency.
Over what standard? Over a standard where the facility doesn't replace the equipment and decides to bypass the economizer because coal is cheap? We're not going to put the economizer in because we're just going to waste the fuel because it's cheaper now. 10 years from now, it might not be, but we'll waste it now. I don't think that was the intent of the General Assembly.
But Mr. Ehler, I think the question Justice Pfeiffer is asking is there a reference in 570946 to replacement equipment. The statute seems to say it shall not relate to facilities on which construction was completed prior to 74.
Well, the term facilities is a defined term. It's any it facilities is defined in 45.
Okay.
And in 45, thermal efficiency improvement facility means any equipment. Any equipment.
So there's no specific inclusion or exclusion of replacement equipment referenced in the statute, and that's where we have to interpret what facilities means as to whether it does or doesn't.
That's right, Your Honor, and there is some assistance in that regard because another subsection of that statute relates to energy conversion facilities, which suggests that you must look at what you're converting from and what you're converting to. And in that statute, they define the word facility to mean any additional equipment, any additional. So you couldn't get original technology built at any time. If the General Assembly meant replacement equipment or wanted to exclude it, it would have simply said it.
So your question then is, or your position is, that the replacement equipment is included. And then do I understand the other part of your argument is relating to the jurisdictional issue here? Or
the jurisdictional issue that Mr. DiMuzio raised is one that I've already covered. Is that the one you're referring to?
Your view is that to capsulize your position on the jurisdictional issue, are you suggesting that the filing was improper?
The filing contained an error. It did not defeat jurisdiction of the commissioner to review the application. Appellant would have you say that if anything was wrong with the application, it defeats jurisdiction over the ability to review the application. That would create quite a backlog.
Okay.
Mr. Eller, when you're talking about the statute itself, the word improvement appears and talks about the thermal efficiency improvement. Doesn't that word improvement suggest that we're talking about an upgrade, if you will, responding to Justice Pfeiffer's question?
Well, I think not. The word improvement is a term that's defined. We don't have to imply. We don't have to read into it. It's defined by basis of an action. The recovery and use says any equipment that recovers and uses waste heat. Or waste steam.
But it's for the primary purpose of the thermal efficiency improvement, right?
Which is any equipment, not replacement.
So you're
equipment.
Looking at the term improvement within that phrase, thermal efficiency improvement.
Well, I think the word improvement needs to, based on what follows the word improvement, it needs to certainly capture and use waste heat so that you use less fuel. The measure is, are you using less fuel to produce the same amount of electricity here?
I guess if the term were thermal efficiency, then your argument seems to be stronger. But if we look at the word improvement, it suggests that you're going to be making it better. You're going to be upgrading. And that's where I'm getting kind of hesitating with your argument.
Your Honor, I can see my time is up on the argument.
You may reserve
some time for
rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. DiMuzio, you've saved almost 2 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to mention a couple things that we didn't get a chance to get into earlier. The definition of waste heat was clearly misapplied by the BTA. They applied a technical sort of industrial meaning. Mr. Coleman, the appellee's own expert, admitted there's no accepted industry meaning of the word waste heat for power plants. And we know from the recent case that I cited, the Columbia Gas case, that we should be using plain language. We know from Key Services case, we should be using plain language. The plain language that's in the record is, for example, if it's superfluous, it's wasted. Mr. Coleman said this is not superfluous. It's absolutely essential. I fail to see how any reasonable person could look at the production of 51% of heat at a power plant and claim it's waste heat. It simply isn't. It can't be. I think common sense tells us that. This law was passed in 1978. It took them until 2000 to apply for this tax exemption. I think that speaks volumes about whether this statute was really intended for this sort of thing. You're really taking what is a giant thermal efficiency unit and saying it's going to be exempt. And I understand his argument that they aren't asking that. But I think if you agree with them here that this is waste heat, that 51% of the heat is waste heat, then I think we have a problem, and I think that there's a real question as to whether or not they really intended that. On Justice Stratton's argument about the question about the fact that what would happen if the convection heat were not captured. A similar argument could be made about the radiant heat, which they claim is not wasted. The radiant heat could escape. We could choose to capture just the convection heat, which is actually more. Would that mean the radiant heat is wasted? That's the sort of thing the BTA did that was arbitrary and capricious. They just said, well, it's different from radiant heat, so we're going to call it waste heat. Is that strict scrutiny? I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mizzio. Mr. Ehler, you've saved 30 seconds of your time.
Your Honor, 51% of the fuel is not what we're claiming. The equipment captures 30 to 40% of the heat. That's clear from the record. This equipment is not essential to the production of electricity, but it is important for the thermal efficient production of electricity. Counsel's own expert indicated, referring to Stewart, that they reheat. They have reheaters and economizers. They have got the full boat. Stewart is fully outfitted. You can go to other plants in the United States right now where the owners made decisions to put in less equipment and burn more fuel right now. This equipment is convective heat equipment. It captures the natural heat in flue gases that rise out of a furnace. That is all my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ehler. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.